Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Alex Hoyer. This spring marks the two-year anniversary of the escape of the St. Louis Six, the brave steers who busted out of a local slaughterhouse and are now enjoying a peaceful pasture home. Local journalist Danny Wisentowski has pulled together an extensive oral history of the saga in this week's Riverfront Times, and he joins me in studio. Also joining us by phone in just a minute are two of the St. Louisans who played big roles in making sure that the steers found a permanent refuge following their escape, Kelly Mano and Adam Brewer. But first, welcome to you, Danny.
It's great to be here, Alex.
I want to read the third paragraph of your story that's in this week's Riverfront Times. It goes, "On March 30, 2017, a city of fractious humans watched in awe as animals took to the streets. In a way, it was the St. Louis version of O.J. Simpson's trip down the freeway in that white Bronco. A city was riveted by the slow-motion spectacle, and seemingly everybody was rooting for the cows." First of all, great writing.
Thank you.
Sounds like it could be staged in some way. But refresh our memories on what happened 2 years ago.
So what happened was, according to a police report that I obtained, how did these six steer, they were described as cows, they were described as heifers. Technically, they are neutered male bulls. They were being kept at this North City slaughterhouse called Star Packing. And there may have been a thunderclap, there may have been something, but one of these animals kicks through a gate, charges through, and makes it out into the streets of North St. Louis.
And the ringleader is really Chico.
That's what, even became apparent even before Chico had a name. This particular brownish-red cow bashed through an iron gate that was around a nursing home. And even while the other five were captured, fairly quickly, this particular cow, Chico, ends up running for something like 5 hours total and is sort of the sole focus of this entire police hunt and pedestrians driving after him. And he alone, though, manages to evade capture for hours and hours and gains a name and gains kind of a legend in the process.
Why did you become interested in writing this story?
I've been here at RFT for about 6 years, and so I was working on something that day, in 2017, and I think we had put something else up. But just the sense that everybody, the moment you hear, do you know there are cows running around North St. Louis? You are going to find a video of that. You are going to do whatever. And so there was this feeling of, we'd all somehow woken up in the same theater watching the same show. And we all wanted to know, how did the cows escape? Where are they going? How do you even attempt to corral a large animal like this? What's the worst that can happen? But I think, the overwhelming sense that everyone wanted to see where this would go, everyone wanted the cows to be okay, it showed this moment where what was kind of this public entertainment became something more, where we weren't just, I want to see this exciting action movie end. It's like, I want to see these cows survive, and I want to see them be okay.
Mm-hmm. And this incident certainly captured the attention of two people who are on the phone with us, Kelly Mano and Adam Brewer. Kelly, let me start with you. How did you first hear about what was going on with these escaped cows?
I was sitting in the carpool line picking up my daughters from elementary school when, the Facebook Live came across my phone, and I just thought, oh my God, this is insane. I have to get down there. So I picked up my daughters and ran them to a babysitter and literally headed straight there from their school.
And what about you, Adam Brewer?
Similar to Kelly, but on Twitter. It was David Carson's Twitter feed. Had seen the same thing and just kind of, I didn't step in immediately, so I kind of was watching things play out. And then Ashley Lindsay did a story for the Post-Dispatch that Farm Sanctuary was going to be taking the cows. So then at that point, I decided to do a GoFundMe to kind of benefit Farm Sanctuary.
And we'll get to the story of where the cows ended up. They didn't end up at Farm Sanctuary. They ended up someplace else. But what is it, Adam, that motivated you from just being one of thousands of St. Louisans who were watching this to participating in an effort to raise money to save them?
Yeah, well, actually, it kind of does revolve around, like, the city aspect. So sort of it was, again, like, okay, well, the rescue is going to take these guys, you know, help with funding and stuff. I've been involved with dog rescue for a long time, so obviously, you know, the cost and everything that goes into it. But it struck me as somebody involved with animal rights to sort of give people in the city, because, again, the interest was, I mean, right off the bat, you could see the interest was off the chain. So just sort of give the people that were interested and the people that weren't, you know, just sort of the sense that, like, because obviously once you do a fundraiser, you're going to see the monetary amount, and I knew that would be high. So just to sort of give people a sense that, like, hey, the lives of the animals are a reflection of, you know, the lives of all the millions of other cows that, you know, are going through similar things. And let's show people, you know, in the city that, you know, we do have a strong, you know, presence of people interested in animal rights and animal welfare.
And Kelly, one of the wildest parts of this story is that you obtained, I don't know if it's something you own, but a T-Rex costume, and you donned this T-Rex costume and made a sign. What did the sign say?
I think the sign said, don't slaughter, send to rescue. Because while a lot of people were watching this from their homes, I was down there with the cows, or at the time, Chico was the only one left. So I wasn't monitoring the internet or anything starting, because I was literally, these cows were covering miles at a time. So I would drive my minivan, stop, park out, chase the cow, drive it, stop, park out, chase the cow. And I was trying to get the attention of the police officers or the rescues to find out, where do these animals come from and where are they going? I thought maybe a truck had overturned on the highway, but all I knew was that these animals are running for their life. I didn't know where they came from, but I knew they didn't want to go back. And after the first or second time of trying to chase this cow and trying to get the cops' attention, I remembered that I have this giant inflatable dinosaur costume in the back of my trunk that I keep in there just for no real good reason other than I'm not a very good grown-up. And so I was like, screw it, I'm putting on the dinosaur costume. And then I found one of my kids' student council posters in the back of the van, flipped that over and wrote the sign, ran back out in my dinosaur costume, and finally everybody paid attention to me and, you know, were talking to me.
That's quite a story.
Yeah.
Danny, let me turn to you. There was a period of time when it was uncertain what would happen to the cows. Can you describe what was going on during that time?
You know, I think, you know, in my reporting, what ended up becoming clear is there was so much going on, not just like the days after the escape, but like the day exactly after that next Friday. And even that night, this is when, you know, as Kelly can tell you, when she's trying to call the slaughterhouse owner, this is when Adam is soon also trying to call the slaughterhouse owner. He is being swamped, from my understanding, with calls and offers and demands.
It was overwhelming for him.
Yeah, and you know, I tried quite a lot to try to talk with the owner of the slaughterhouse directly, but what we do have are his Facebook posts and things like that, and you can kind of get a sense of the messages that he was receiving. You know, to be clear, you know, this is a slaughterhouse that specializes in halal meat, and he was unfortunately getting a lot of Islamophobic, you know, kind of comments, and you know, comments that were really saying, you know, you're a monster, what are you doing? And so, you know, for those who are, you know, trying to create this rescue, to try to create some kind of negotiating bond with this guy, they're immediately coming into a situation where the kind of social media sphere of public shaming and public activism is kind of working against those who are trying to save these animals.
Public shaming in what way?
You know, in the sense of people saying, you know, this slaughterhouse in North City is, you know, going to murder these cows, or, you know, this, you know, and again, critiques that would get into kind of racial or ethnic, you know, stereotypes of the type of owner this guy was, you know, which wasn't fair, obviously. But there was, it brought in so much interest that, you know, from my understanding, just for the people who actually had a serious, substantial, you know, means to save these cows, they had to, you know, show that they actually were serious and they weren't trying to cheat this guy, and they were going to kind of deal with him in a level way.
And as you point out in the article, there were plenty of people who are meat eaters who were donating to these GoFundMe campaigns to save them.
Yeah, and I think that was something that, Adam had told me that stood out most, is that most of the people who reached out to him and donated were acknowledging that they were meat eaters.
Right. And there's plenty more in the article about some controversy about where the cows would go. But eventually, Kelly and Adam, you get together on a place to donate the money to. And we're going to talk with the proprietor of that outfit in just a moment. But can you tell me how you settled on this particular place to send the cows? Let me go to you, Adam.
Yeah, well, actually, if you go back to the original GoFundMe and you look kind of at the timeline, around Saturday, like you said, things with Omar, you know, had been contentious. But around Saturday, me and him had come to the agreement that we had found a foster home in Wildwood and that we were going to be taking them Sunday or Monday. At that point, kind of regardless if we had found, you know, a rescue at that point or not, we were going to use the funds in the GoFundMe at that point for, you know, fencing and vetting, fooding, you know, everything. And then we'd continue to fundraise if need be. So that was the plan, you know, Saturday, was that we were going to be getting them out. You know, I had his word that they were safe, you know, everything like that. So then Sunday I got a call from Kelly Mano, who had mentioned her friend, Kelly Backus, wife of David Backus, was interested in getting General Bard involved, and then that ended up being the case. So then at that point, again, I put on the GoFundMe kind of to poll everybody, you know, who had donated to sort of see, you know, if that would be something they'd be interested in. So then I spoke to General Bard, kind of got comfortable at that point to, you know, go that route. Talked to Omar, did a three-way call with him, told him that, you know, General Bard...
Omar is in charge of the slaughterhouse.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to Omar at that point, told him plans had kind of changed, that instead of going direct to foster, because again, at the point they were going to foster, we had transport and everything set up, and then General Bard came in and, you know, did their own transport. But at that point, I told Omar things had changed. Jay would then be flying in and would be meeting Omar, because at that point, my friend Sasha and Jake were going to be meeting Omar at the slaughterhouse while I came into town, because I was in Chicago at my mom's at that point. So then things kind of changed. Jay came in, and at that point I agreed to release my funds to them, and that would be where the cows would be going based on the feedback that I had gotten from donors.
Great. And Kelly, we're running short on time, but are you happy with the end result as it is now?
I'm very happy. Any result that ends up with cows getting hugs on Sunday, I'm absolutely thrilled with. It sucks that we lost Spirit, but you know, the General Barn did everything they could, and like you said, Omar was not easy for any of us to deal with, the General Barn included. And so I think they did the best job that they could do, and really the Backus is pulling it all together, connecting the dots for us and kind of taking the weight off our shoulders, because it became a story that was even bigger than itself, and it was getting really heavy for me and Adam to carry.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we need to move along, and we're going to take a break. We'll continue the conversation with the RFT's Danny Wisentowski. Thanks so much, Kelly Mano and Adam Brewer, for being with us.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. We'll continue our conversation about the oral history of the St. Louis Six in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
Welcome back. We're talking with the Riverfront Times' Danny Wisentowski, who has written an oral history of the six steers who escaped from a St. Louis slaughterhouse 2 years ago. Also joining us now over the phone is Ellie Lax, founder of Gentle Barn. That's the organization that ultimately made a home for the St. Louis Six, and that home is about an hour southwest of St. Louis. Ellie Lax, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you describe what Gentle Barn is?
Sure. The Gentle Barn is home to animals rescued from severe abuse or neglect. We bring them in, we rehabilitate them with vet care and a whole slew of alternative methods. Once healed, if we can find a home of their own, great, in a timely manner. If not, we give them sanctuary with us for the rest of their lives. And when they're ready, we partner with them to host groups of at-risk inner-city special needs kids, as well as school groups and private tours, to help people recover from their own stories and to connect children with the love of nature and animals.
To recover from what kinds of stories?
Well, we work with kids in probation, in foster care, in drug and alcohol rehab centers, living in the inner city. We work with war veterans, domestic violence shelters, victims of sexual assault. So we basically have a whole barnyard full of animals that have survived their own set of circumstances. And then we bring in people that are trying to survive their own recovery and cling to their own resilience. And the people coming in, no matter what they're going through, whether they're scared or lonely or sick or battered, whatever they're going through, there's an animal in the barnyard that mirrors their story. So through hearing their story being told through someone else, by seeing that someone else thrive, it gives them hope and inspiration that they can recover from their own stories and find happiness like the animals in the gentle barn.
Now, I understand that there was a $400,000 GoFundMe campaign that helped set up the Gentle Barn here in Missouri. But other than that, how do you keep the place running?
By the generosity of the community, actually. There's so many people in the community that love animals and wish that they could help more or do more or have more animals, but it's not in their wherewithal. So for them to partner with us, fund us so that we can do the work, they get to feel like they're saving animals and doing good in the world while we're feeding, cleaning, and taking care of the animals that they're funding. So it's a wonderful partnership. And every day we're looking to the community to help us so that we can even save more lives.
And when did you become aware of the St. Louis Six, the cows that had escaped the slaughterhouse in North St. Louis?
Yeah, I watched it on the national news along with everybody else and was so scared for them and watching them run through the streets. It was awful to watch, was so worried about them. Then when they got sent back to the slaughterhouse, you know, we wanted them to live just like everybody else. And then when the Omar kind of announced that he would be willing to hold them for a couple days and let a sanctuary come, we thought for sure a Midwest local sanctuary would come and save them and that there would be a happy ending. But the days passed by, and there was no one saying that they would come and get them. So finally, when Omar announced that he was going to slaughter them the next day, our phone started ringing. Kelly Backus made a personal plea for us to save them, and my husband got on a plane and got there in time to pull them out and ultimately get them to the gentle barn. Mm-hmm.
Danny Wisentowski, steer are slaughtered every day, thousands of them, I'm sure. Why is it that you think... other than maybe it is just the video, but why are these six, why did they capture the attention when this is something that goes on all the time?
You know, I think what was unique about this is that, you know, in a debate over, you know, what is the proper way to ethically, you know, relate to animals, how much should you eat, is, you know, how do you split those hairs? What this event did was it put kind of everyone on the same level initially. Everyone started from that ground zero where they were like, the cow should survive. The ones that I watched, you know, juking around police cars, the ones that spent hours, there was this communal emotional investment and empathy in watching animals that wanted to live do that. And I think, you know, although, yes, like these cows are not unique in the sense that there are others in slaughterhouses, you know, there is something special about the human experience of watching them be alive and be conscious and to act out, I think, instincts that everyone can see as reflective of conscious beings, of things that want to remain alive. And I think that's why there were so many, even as meat eaters, even as, you know, I remember talking to Kelly Mano, is when she told me that when she saw these animals, when she sped down there and put on a T-Rex costume, she wasn't thinking about whether she had eaten a cheeseburger or not. And so I think what was special about this isn't so much as saying something about the cows, but this incident said something about us as people and the way that we rarely get to see animals doing these kinds of things because our experience with them is so kind of sharpened to either what we're buying in a fast food restaurant or the idea that this is taking place in, you know, we just imagine the factory, you know, doing what it has to do, and out the other end comes our food, and we hope that things are fine and that this is, you know, done ethically. I think this kind of opened a window to both the mechanics of how food is processed and also the lived experiences of what those animals are going through.
And Ellie, how do you focus your efforts? Because I'm sure there are plenty of things that you'd like to do but don't have the resources or the money to do them. So how do you pick what it is that you want to focus on?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, if we had the financial resources right now, we would be in all 50 states. And you're right. That's not possible in that in this moment. And so basically, we have plans and we have strategy planning and board meetings where we have wishes and desires for fundraising campaigns. But at the end of the day, up until now for the last 20 years, these things kind of have a way of picking us. So, you know, I never thought that we would have a General Barn in St. Louis, even though I did grow up here. It wasn't on our radar. Mm-hmm. When we watched the cows escape, we thought that surely somebody else would kind of save the day. But it kind of chose us, called us in to help. We got involved, and now we have a General Barn in St. Louis. So sometimes when you just kind of surrender and let the journey unfold, sometimes it unfolds for you.
Right. Have you noticed a change in the way these animals have been living their lives, their mood, perhaps?
Yes, in the biggest possible way. We have been able to watch these cows recover from their trauma, from the way they were raised, from their fear of humans, into basically being puppy cows. And the recovery process is just like anyone's recovery process. If we're working with kids that are victims of abuse or sexual assault, we're looking at people that have trauma, that have to learn to trust, that have to learn to forgive, that have to put their past behind them. And like any person, these cows went through the exact same process, where at first they were very scared of us. Mm-hmm. But it started with me for the first 3 months, and then I had volunteers and staff help me, where we would have me or others in the barnyard every single day, reading to them, singing to them, even taking naps with them, but just getting used to our coming and goings.
Right.
And so after a while, they started kind of accepting that we were going to be hanging around and that mm-hmm. no harm was going to come to them. And then we started incorporating cookies, where every time we would come and spend time with them, we would leave cookies behind. And they very quickly realized that we were leaving them. So instead of waiting for us when we left, they started asking for the cookies when we arrived.
We are out of time, but thank you so much, Ellie Lax of General Barn, for joining us and telling us about the General Barn. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Come see them.
All right. And Danny Wissentowski of the Riverfront Times, thank you for writing this story, and thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.